The Articulate Coven is the original, unofficial podcast and fan community for Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and Anne Rice's Immortal Universe from AMC and AMC+. Welcome to The Articulate Coven, the unofficial fan podcast and fan community for Anne Rice's Lives of the Mayfair Witches, Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire, The Vampire Chronicles, and everything else Anne Rice. Honestly, I am one of your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are The Articulate Coven. Ashley, our rewatch continues. We're in the middle of a rewatch of season one of Interview with the Vampire in preparation for season two launching. And we are coming up on the fourth episode of this first season. If you have not seen the season already in its entirety, I'd strongly suggest that you listen to our previous episodes where we're going through it episode by episode. We're going to talk about some things in here that are spoilers for the rest of the season. So listen to the first episodes first, and once you've done with the season, then you can come check our rewatches if you want to. Ashley, I'm going to get our template with all the details on this episode in just a second, but tell me big thoughts overall. What'd you think of this one?
I was excited for this episode to have a different voice and have a different storyteller, narrator. In this episode, I really tried to pay attention to the relationship in the background of Louis and Lestat to see what they were doing and how they were behaving, since we have a different narrator to tell us that story. So, this was a really fun episode.
Yeah, I agree. I like this episode more on rewatch than I remember liking it, honestly. And yeah, we're going to get to it here in a little while, but honestly, more than I have good reason to like it. We'll get to that in a second. This one is The Ruthless Pursuit of Blood with All a Child's Demanding, directed by Keith Powell. It's written by Eleanor Burgess, Anne Rice, and Rollin Jones. Those are our three credits. Louis takes the day off while Rashid and Daniel take a trip to the library to read the next segment of our story as told by Anne Frank meets Stephen King, Claudia, Louis and Lestat's newly made vampire daughter, who is on a ruthless pursuit of blood with all a child's demanding. First and foremost, we get several scenes in this one between Rashid / Armand and Daniel. I really, really love that they're drawing it out. Again, I didn't remember all these hints so early in the season. I say early, we're halfway through, I suppose, at this point, but still,
right.
I felt like that was kind of like, it was only hinted at if you were a big, deep book fan, and it sort of brought out of nowhere, but that's not the case at all. They're stringing you along this whole season on who exactly Rashid is and whether or not Daniel remembers everything correctly.
Yeah, so far I haven't caught a cheat. I've been really paying attention to that, and I thought maybe we'd see one this episode because I thought there might be one in this episode, but no, we're still clear of storytelling cheats.
So watching it this time, I did question exactly how close Armand gets to that doorway when he first comes and tells Daniel that, you know, Louis's not going to be around. But later in the episode, we see Louis come out and sit in their little interior courtyard where the tree
yes.
is, and there's the sunlight, and he's not in the direct sunlight, right? Like he is basking in it still, out of the direct rays, and he's not harmed at all. So our vampires, and we see it too with the openings that they have in the townhouse in New Orleans too.
Yeah.
They can get very close to the sun and not be burned. They can, you know, it's not indirect sunlight that's a problem. They have to be in the rays itself before it burns them. So I agree with you. I don't think there is a cheat here. I kind of thought there might have been the first time, or we questioned, well, now he's been in the sunlight, but he wasn't really in the sunlight. Let's get to the diaries here for a second. A couple of things about dates. The first diary is dated 1917. So if you work backwards, again, Louis and Lestat do not live together for very long before things go south. Louis freaks out and ruins New Orleans, and then they make this daughter accidentally. It's kind of a short-lived, you know, first stage of their romance before they you know, bring in a kid to salvage the marriage.
Well, and yeah, we're reminded constantly that that doesn't fix a marriage.
Yeah, and it doesn't fix this one either.
No.
The other date, though, that I want to point out here is when he goes, you know, first of all, I love it. Armand tells him, Rashid tells him to start with the book on the left. And he looks at the book on the left.
Immediately picks up the one on the right.
Yeah, immediately goes to the far right. So the far right, he opens it to a page and Claudia is talking about arriving in Paris. That is November 14th, 1945 is the date that's there. Okay. I had it in my mind that in season two, they were going to be in an active war zone. But if they hold to this, if that date's true, May 8th of 1945 was VE Day. That's Victory in Europe Day. So the end of the war in Europe had already happened several months before. And August 14th in 1945 is VJ Day. That's when the Japanese surrendered. So World War II is fully over. This is a Paris, by the time they come to Paris, at least. We don't know exactly at this point how long they stay in other parts of Europe. But when they come to Paris, when they're on the Western Front, so to speak, it's going to be a post-war France that they're, you know, embarking upon.
Yeah, we definitely got a tease of war in there, but I think it was more, was it World War One?
No, she's going through, it's when they're talking about the, it's in the book before they get
the
to
blood
Paris.
Being...
Yeah, she's eating, they're eating POWs, or she is anyway, yeah. And she's talking about how they taste really sad.
Right, this is not happy blood.
But again, I guess that makes sense, because we know they go to Paris, or excuse me, they go to Europe at least while the war is still going on. So some of the time that they're in the East, I think we are going to get at least one or two fights with some Nazis, is all I'm saying, which is great. Let's rip apart Nazis with vampires. I like that.
Every day of the week.
Yeah.
I love it. I just watched the newest Indiana Jones movie, and I was so excited to kick Nazi ass again.
Ah, Herr Jones. So glad
so
that
fun.
Anything you can find, I can steal from you. And then you can punch me in the nose.
I love it when he hits a Nazi.
Listen, okay, so here, I'm going to go ahead and spill it. I don't like Claudia, guys. I don't. I do. I don't really like her in the books. I don't really like her here either. I sympathize with her. I appreciate and I connect with the way that the boys feel for her, especially, you know, as a father myself. But the character of Claudia has just never really hit with me. It only did at all when she was played by Kirsten Dunst in the movie, and that's because I was her age. I had a crush on her. But, like, listen, the accent here doesn't help, but that's not why I don't like her. This is just not a part of the story or a part of these characters that fascinates me. It's not why I felt, you know, I go back, why did I fall in love with Lestat? It's the prelude to Tale of the Body Thief, when he's recounting all of the events of, you know, life as a rock star vampire, and it's
right.
He's got no daddy issues there, you know, sad for poor Claudia at the start of that book. He's sad for lots of things at that point, but he's not really thinking much about Claudia, and I don't either, honestly. Now, I will say, having said that, I really like this episode. The bringing in the diaries, which is not, I mean, we do see the diaries in the books, but it takes place much later, and they're not, we don't dive into a lot of Claudia's point of view like we do here in this episode. And I think it's really setting the table for some things that this whole series is going to do over time, but definitely we're going to get more of in season two, where it's not just Louis's point of view. And it's not just Louis' story that's being told. The interview with the vampire is not the vampire, the titular vampire is not only Louis, I think, in this series. So this is the first example of that.
Right. I love Claudia. And I think because I like Louis more than you like Louis. So
that's true.
I think Claudia is so much more about Louis and how Louis sees her and how much he loved her and how much he was willing to sacrifice for her. I think that's the reason why I've always liked her, because I've seen her through Louis's eyes.
You know, I do like the scenes of her early education. You know, we get,
oh, they're so great,
glimpses of Lestat and Louis there. We get glimpses of their relationship from her point of view that already begins to tell us, you know, Louis's version that he's told so far, which he's, you know, said is the more nuanced portrayal.
Nuanced.
Well, it's not necessarily nuanced towards the truth, seemingly, unless Claudia, unless we're taking that Claudia is a liar or these documents have been doctored, which I don't think there's any reason to believe that they have.
No.
Speaking of not believing things, we catch, or Daniel catches, Rashid praying at the regular times for a faithful Islamic person. They would pray, what is it, five times a day, I guess, facing Mecca. I don't think that this part of Rashid's story is actually Rashid's and not Armand's. I think this is Armand praying here, not just Rashid.
Right. Well, and we get a little, we've been talking about his backstory and where he's going to be from. We got a little snippet of a language that wasn't Arabic.
Yes, and Daniel specifically calls it out. He triangulates it, and he's like, that's like Slavic? What is that? So right. That would put him in the right part of the world for Armand's story. And we talked about this, I think, in our initial viewing, too. Like, it's not historically inaccurate to imagine that there are people of Islamic faith from that point in time in history, from that place in history. And the other thing that occurred to me, the Islamic faith may be one that he was not born in necessarily, but was converted to. You know, Armand's
right,
story is one
true.
Of like, it's an odyssey. You know, even before he meets Marius, he goes through a lot, as we talk about in our novel episode that we did recently. But
well, and he's been alive for a long time.
Yeah,
and he's been through a lot of religious experiences as a vampire, as much as a person.
Well, and it would be interesting to me if, you know, what if he was born in the Islamic faith and trained that way as a young man, but then forced with the coven to work as the opposite of the Christian God, you know, and like literally not only is he blaspheming, but he's blaspheming double.
Well, I think it's true that Armand really struggles with faith.
Yes, absolutely. So anyway, we get that hint there. I feel like I understand the idea that he's lying to us about so many other things. You know, why would we believe necessarily that he's being true here? I think it'd just be a weird swerve on the creator's part, though, to make that although we're going to meet real Rashid in season two, so maybe there's a fuller story there that we don't know about
either.
God,
who knows?
Very, very interesting.
As long as we don't go the way of the Mayfair witches.
Don't bring in any of Louis's old boyfriends that you made up. There's no geneticist. Okay. Don't do that.
With a dumb nickname.
I love Daniel's notes. So he has that exchange with Rashid and then rushes to his computer to open, you know, his
But Gozian
his secret
is a
document.
Fucking treat.
Isn't he, though?
Man, he's amazing.
And again,
I cannot get tired of watching him.
I'm telling you, the downside of that, the fact that we've got such an amazing actor in that role, the downside of that is they are not going to give us David Talbot as we know him, guys. That character may exist somewhere, especially through the Talamasca story, but the David Talbot story with Lestat is going to be Eric Bogosian. I got money on it. I'm telling you, they're
going
to keep him
like
around
going
for the long
way.
Haul. Yeah. I mean, unless something happens to Eric, that he's going to be here playing that role. Okay. So Claudia has a line here as they go back to her story. She says, you wouldn't believe how time flies when there's people to eat and money to spend. See, that's a good one,
and
man.
They do have fun. Like, they yes. do have fun as a family.
Yes. She specifically calls out, they fight, but they generally make up pretty quick. And when they can't, I'm there to make it right. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's a family, right? That is,
yeah.
Yes, this is a fucked up family.
Look, whose family isn't a little fucked up?
Oh.
She captures the being that trapped in that body so beautifully throughout this episode. It's really interesting to see her growth. It's a great way to show passage of time. This is a great way to move us forward in our story, I think. It's just... Oh, it's heartbreaking.
It is a little bit. So what do you think about this? You know, Charlie, I love the way that she talks about him. And we wouldn't get any of that if we hadn't added the diaries to this story. You know,
right.
If you hadn't brought them in here and made this, we're going to do an episode in Claudia's voice, then you don't ever hear lines like, his name is Charlie. You know,
right.
It's so, oh my God, my favorite one though, I wrote it down here. I got to find it. I want to know what his tongue tastes like. Now, that line's got an edge when said by a vampire, right? But damn, that's a pretty accurate explanation of the way that lust feels.
Right. She's you know? Just, she's figuring out what it's like to be in love and to be horny and to want something more than what you got. And we always want to grow up fast, you know, like as young women, we're like, oh, I can't wait to be older. I can't wait to be grown up. And here she is growing up, but she's stuck in this fucking 14-year-old body.
I mean, it is very much a mirror in some ways of like Louis' struggle with himself. Like when he was mortal, he longed to be himself fully in society and struggled with that. Now he's a vampire, sort of escaped into that, thinking that was the answer to his troubles. And now he has to hide his very nature. Also, he kind of hates himself because he has to take life to live. Okay, Claudia's sexual awakening, though, happening on Lover's Lane, like, pretty fucking cool. I know in a couple of, like, an episode or two, he's going to beat the hell out of Louis, and that's absolutely worse, but this is maybe the most cruel moment for Lestat.
Like, oh, yeah.
Or can we imagine, is he really that clueless, that thoughtless, that
I think he wants to teach her a lesson.
Okay.
You know, and I think sometimes parents want to teach us lessons and they go overboard.
It's like the dad making the kid smoke a whole pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's just like, it's like, I mean, it's like forced puberty, it feels like.
Maybe it's a little bit, I'm sure it's heightened, obviously, because she's talking about how hurt she is and she's coming from that perspective of having a broken heart because and then also feeling really guilty and horrible that she's accidentally killed her boyfriend.
Oh, I mean, but see there too, like, I don't know, maybe I'm giving Lestat more credit because he is my favoritist, but like, she, caught up in the moment or not, she knew she was killing Charlie. Like, we've never seen her in the whole time that she's been with them. She's never done the little drink on anybody. Everybody that she bites dies. Like,
yeah.
I find myself at that moment, I didn't feel for her. Then she takes him home. She's weeping and Lestat makes him burn her. Now I feel, you know, now I feel for her. Like, that's, he's too much twice in this episode in an unnecessarily cruel way. And it gives us a hint of what's coming. But I do, again, since we're always concerned with the unreliable narrator, I wonder, like, how much is her reading into this and blaming him? Did Louis have any part of it and she wrote it out because she, you know, forgives Louis everything? I don't know.
Well, there is a reason why they want to leave Lestat.
Yeah, you know, okay, Joel, fair enough, fair
we
enough.
We do have to accept that these two were willing to kill his ass.
Because they are very selfish and inconsiderate, Ashley.
Yeah.
They just want to put a German on their bayonets.
a Frenchman.
I like when Louis rejoins Daniel here finally, though, and Daniel is so sassy in this episode, especially with him and with Rashid earlier. But that's when I noted, okay, so Louis comes in and sits on the edge of the sunlight, not a problem. Mm-hmm. So Rashid earlier standing in the doorway wasn't a problem. I do love the whole interaction though there between Louis and Daniel. Louis explains why he didn't share these diaries with Daniel before. Daniel, by the way, has been dreaming of Polynesian Mary's, the bar where he met Louis in 73. I'm sure that won't come up again shortly.
No, why would it? That's just a coincidence.
Okay, but that made me fairly, I'm fairly convinced now that Daniel is not playing coy. He really doesn't have those memories. He barely remembers anything from the interviews. And for a lot of the last 20, 30, 40 years, I think he's almost considered this all a bad dream, except he's got a scar on his neck. And he does remember that time I interviewed a vampire. But, like, I don't think he had any of the tapes until Louis sent him.
There isn't any need for him to do this. He's got a great career. You know, he is ill. He should be at home drinking, I don't know, tea and chilling out. But here he is in Dubai going to have his treatments done by some doctor he doesn't know. You know, he's putting himself in a really vulnerable place to get some truth or hopefully find some truth.
Do we think there is anything more than just flawed humans don't do great at being a parent? Why are he and his daughters on the outs? He's mentions here he's got two daughters and the love is, and he never doesn't really say, but it's clear they're not close. Just as you said, it's the middle of a pandemic and he goes halfway across the world and we're not led to believe that he's spoken to either one of them about it at all.
No, it's not really clear anybody knows where he's gone except his doctor.
Yeah, his doctor and his publisher, right? Like he told his publisher he was going somewhere.
Oh, that's right. He has that conversation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, he has that phone conversation.
He's like, no, it's a book. I remember what a book is. Which, by the way, it's been 10 years since he's written a full book. He's just been doing, you know, like the article here and there and living off of, you know, residuals.
Royalties.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, man. I wonder if Daniel's family history is going to come up in a larger way. We talked about in a previous episode when they tell the dessert story about how that his first wife, he met her and fell in love and they got married like right after he had gotten his life together, meaning right after he left Armand and Louis, most likely. So like, I don't know. We've talked about a lot in our first watch. We have not talked about much this time. Daniel's sexuality. Obviously, he currently, at least as he's speaking in the show, seems to imply that he is straight and that, you know, any gay activities he had in the past were kind of just a thing that he did for the drugs. But like, I wonder, I don't know, did his daughters discover, you know, an old boyfriend, or are they trying to talk him into coming out and admitting his own sexuality? Or I don't know, is it something worse? I'm intrigued.
Them lingering in the background,
yeah,
the way that they're kind of just been mentioned, the only thing I can think they could be really used for is leverage against him for some reason.
Oh, now see, well, that's a pretty Armand thing to do, is like, your girls are very well taken care of and will remain to be so if you do what you're supposed to do. Man, I don't know. I'm intrigued by Daniel's family situation and like what's happening in the 10 years before he gets those tapes and this interview starts again. That's what I'm honestly most
curious about right now. He's clearly seeking something. You know,
yeah, exactly. And I don't think it's just
your life or your.
I don't think it's just
for what's next.
I don't think it's just the healing though, right? Like he tremors a couple of times in this episode. In my initial watch, I thought it was more about Daniel's desperate to grab onto life. And so the vampire, you know, memory sparks the idea that he could do something about it. I don't know. I think,
but there's a vibe I get from him that is just like, I don't really care if I live or die. Like, he gives off that vibe.
Absolutely he does. Absolutely he does. So I don't know. Where do you think it's going, folks? We genuinely love to hear your opinions on this. Does Daniel's family, are they going to matter in the broader story of this? Or is that just kind of the backstory that helps bring Daniel into this modern tale with our vampires? I don't know. I got faith in Rolin Jones, though, that it's all going to go very, very interesting places, though. Ashley, I am not super excited about the upcoming narrative, if I'm being honest with you. I'm a little sad about where this story now goes.
Well, we have to go there.
Indeed.
And we know it's probably not 100% accurate.
That's what I'm holding to. And I am hopeful that that will be proven out as we get into season two, which is still, it's so close, guys. It's just around the corner. May 12th is the launch for season two. So stay up to date with us. Keep our rewatch going. Let us know what you're thinking about these episodes as they stew again in your memory as we get ready for what's next in this tale. And join us again next week as we continue our rewatch of season one. Ashley, any closing thoughts for this episode?
Just how amazing the costumes continue to be.
Oh, man. The whole production. Like, listen. You know that we both think our leads are amazing and the performances absolutely deserve some consideration for the acting awards. But the fact that this show wasn't even nominated for production design or costume design is genuinely bananas. And I'm hoping that will be remedied with season two's release. I think the opportunity for, you know, wartime and post-wartime Paris especially, there's some really, really beautiful sets already that we've seen in the trailers. And I think there's an opportunity to do something kind of splashy. And hopefully, you know, the Emmys and others were paying attention to the fan reaction that they missed this one last year.
And maybe they want to make sure it was going to last.
I mean, that, you know, absolutely.
Be more,
you know,
than
is it going to
have
an effect on pop culture, you know, and the narrative of television overall? I think it's absolutely going to.
At least with us.
I don't have any faith in the Mayfair series, y'all, but this one's going to be fine until they kick Rollins to the curb, at least.
I know people that just like the Mayfair series.
I don't understand.
And they don't have any really connection to the books, but they just like it as a witch show.
I mean, listen, good for. I'm glad that you're finding television that you enjoy. Speaking of television that we enjoy, I'm headed this evening to see Dune 2 finally on the big screen. Ashley, excited to check that one out. I'll tell you guys what I think about it next week. You reading anything interesting or seeing anything interesting right now?
Oh, you know, I haven't. I've really been doing documentaries.
Oh, what you watching?
Lately. I got sucked into this shit. This show called Evil Lives Here. And it's a real bummer, y'all. It's like about people who like found out that their husband was a serial killer or, you know, deeply, deeply troubling things like that.
Okay, so I have not gotten into it at all, but my wife was telling me not too long ago, apparently there's like 100 episode TikTok series from some woman called Who the Fuck Did I Marry?
Who the fuck did I marry?
Is this a similar kind of thing? Like a total?
Well, I don't do the TikTok, so I don't know for sure, okay. But I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah. Very much a big reveal. It reminds me of a few years ago, there was a podcast season that was made of this, and then they made a TV adaptation of it, too. It was like
Dirty John?
Yeah, Dirty John. That's the one I was trying
There's
to
There's an episode about Dirty John on Evil Lives Here.
Oh, nice. All right. So a whole TV. If you're a Dirty John fan, there you go. Ashley's got your latest watch for you. Check it out. Evil Lives Here. Where were you watching it? It's on Paramount? That sounds like a Paramount thing.
No, it's actually Discovery Plus.
So it's
on. So
I bet it's on HBO Max, too.
Right, yeah, well, it is. That's where I watch now. It.
Yeah. All of the Discovery stuff is there pretty much, I think, these days. All right. Well, there you go. You've got some more bummer TV because that's what we're about to be headed into. I'm sorry, folks. You got to go through it to get to the other side. The other being an excellent season of television coming up for us on May 12th. All right. Until the next time we talk to you, we've been your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are the Articulate Coven. Thanks for listening to The Articulate Coven. You can join our community on Facebook by following the links in the show notes or searching for Articulate Coven on Facebook. You can subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at articulatecoven.com. And share us with your Anne Rice-loving friends.